I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ashley. And this, guys, is Nip Tuck Pod.
We are your girl chat. We say the things you want to hear, the things that you're thinking but you don't want to say out loud. And we're all about being strong, aspirational women who basically don't give a...
Lauren, anyway, if you want unfiltered chat, amazing beauty and product recommendations, then look no further, guys. This is the podcast where you will get all of the girly chat.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Vicky Patterson, The Secret 2. This week, I'm joined by none other than Vex King. Welcome, Vex. How are you?
Vicky, thank you so much for having me. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I am really good. I'm up north this week, so I've spent a day with my little niece, feeding the baby lambs and the goats at the farm. So I think, yeah, it was very... today's been very good for me soul. Very cold. It's freezing up, yeah, but very good for me soul.
Yeah, is it raining up there as well?
Or... Mate, it's Newcastle. It's always fucking raining.
Well, to be fair, I think that's just a UK thing.
Yeah. We're actually... So Newcastle, I mean, this is really boring, but we're on our river. It's called the River Tyne, and it burst its banks yesterday. It rained that much. Right. I know. So, yeah, it is definitely raining, but maybe didn't mind. Put a wellies on, put a little raincoat on.
Has that happened before, or is that quite a rare thing?
No, it is rare. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely happened before. We're not, we're definitely accustomed to the wet weather up here. But yeah, it doesn't happen very often. We have got some like things in place. Don't worry. We're not all just floating around in pedalos up here.
You know what I love about Newcastle, though? I feel like the further north you go, although it's colder and a little bit rainier, I feel like people are more jolly up north. That's a generalization, but I always find that's the case.
No, but it's like, as far as stereotypes go, it's a pretty nice one. Like my fella's from Southeast London. And we've been going out for like 5 years and stuff. And every time he comes up here, like he's always blown away by people's like patience and kindness and all the rest of it. Well, I'm so sorry. I feel like we've talked about the weather and where I'm from and everything. And what we should really be talking about is you, of course. I want to chat to you about all of your books, your fantastic new one, but let's start at the start, shall we?
Yep.
Okay. So you are a champion of self-acceptance and an advocate for kindness. But how did that journey start for you? How did it begin?
That's an interesting question, actually, because I remember someone asking me why I'm always so kind. And my response was like, how do you actually answer that? You know, you're just kind for no reason. But I think, to be honest, if I look back on my history, I think it's because life was so unkind to me that I didn't want other people to experience that level of unkindness. And that's why I try to, you know, I always try my best to make people feel welcome and to share love with them. So when I was 6 months old, my dad passed away. My mum's business with an abusive family member went bankrupt. And then for 3 years of my childhood, my family and I were technically homeless. So we didn't have a fixed home. We were moving around. We moved to hostels, hotels. We lived with family for a bit, and
very nomadic.
Yeah, and that period of my life was extremely traumatizing, horrific, and there was just a lot of emotional pain. And when we first got our family home, so it was on a council estate, that felt like a dream come true. Like we finally had a space that we could call ours. But I remember stepping out that house for the first time and just trying to, you know, play with my football that I had. And suddenly all these kids from around the estate, like they literally formed a line and just started shouting out racist abuse to me. And it was almost like, you're not welcome here. And that theme then continued. So I was living next to a house of roughly, I would say it was like 10 plus teenagers. And every weekend they would get absolutely hammered, right? So they had a drum kit and they'd be banging the drums, they'll be drinking. And then at like midnight to 3 a.m., they'd knock on our house, open the letterbox and start shouting out racist abuse. One time we had a washing machine that we were going to dispose of and it was on our front lawn. And I remember them getting a firework and putting it in the washing machine and it exploded. Now, as a child, you know, I didn't know what was going on. To me, it just sounded like a bomb going off. And I remember just being so afraid. And as I got older, I looked around and all I felt was pain and suffering. And I said to myself, you know, one day I'm going to change my life for myself and for my family. And that kind of set me on this journey towards self-development and self-love. And yeah, I guess that's why I do what I do now. I don't want people to suffer in the same way I did and go through the same or feel the same pain that I did. So, you know, I just try to be kind and try to do my bit for the world.
Like the way you describe it, it's as if like this path like presented itself to you and it was very pragmatic and it almost just made sense. But actually, I've always been told that hurt people hurt people. So everything you went through, all of those traumatic experiences, and honestly, I'm fighting back tears listening to your story. Like I'm really emotional anyway, but that was a lot for me. So all of those like heartbreaking experiences, like if anything, I would expect them to make somebody mad at the world. So they would make me be angry and feel like, I don't know, disenfranchised almost. But yet you turned it into your superpower. Like that is pretty special.
I think I did, you know, and I have, I think now, but you're completely right that, you know, I don't think hurt people mean to hurt people most of the time. No. It's just that our trauma and our wounds get the most of us. And because people kind of cut us or the world cuts us, we then automatically or unconsciously end up cutting the people around us, especially those closest to us. And you see that happen a lot in, you know, the dynamics of a relationship. So, you know, I was mad at the world, if I'd be completely honest with you. You know, I was born into a Hindu family and I remember my mum used to always talk about God. And I used to, you know, question this superior force thinking, you know, if there is a God, then why am I suffering so much? I'd seen, you know, a gun to my uncle's head. I'd been, you know, beaten up by people around me. My family had no money. My mum struggled to put food on the table. I seen her work harder than any person I've ever seen work, you know, just to make ends meet. And I thought to myself, like, you know, why do I have to go through all of this? You know, what have I done that's so bad that's inviting all this punishment? And at times, you know, the hurt did lead me to hurt people. I know I said some things that I regret to my mum or to my siblings and to the people.
You're only human.
Exactly. I'm only human. And, you know, I embrace all my humanity. I don't condone all the actions that took place, especially when I was younger. But I've shown that younger version of myself grace because that's all I can do. And even to this age, you know, sometimes people always see me smiling, they always see me happy. And, you know, I wrote a book called Good Vibes, Good Life. So they're like, oh, you know, they sometimes label me the king of good vibes. And I'm like, you know, I'm not always on a, you know, positive 100% of the time because that's just a part of being human. We experience a whole spectrum of emotions. And believe me, when I'm hungry, you might sometimes see me a little bit angry. You could probably ask my wife. But yeah, it's just about embracing my humanity and always making a conscious choice and thinking to myself, A, does this action or do these words come from a place of love? And if they don't, is there a different approach I can try in this situation? And it's just pausing before I, you know, take a certain action or say a certain thing that really changes the trajectory of my energy so I don't end up hurting other people. But at the same time, again, like you said, you're only human, so it's okay if you do. It's just about, I think, discovering yourself and addressing any wounds that might be giving birth to certain actions that hurt other people.
Yeah. And all of these sort of like traumatic experiences and events that happened to you in your sort of like formative years, was there somebody available who helped you navigate them, or were you, did you just come up with this sort of concept of, you know, passing kindness on and self-acceptance and all that? Did you come up with it yourself?
If I be completely honest with you, like So for example, therapy at the moment, I think it's so good that it's so normalized, because I think so many people can benefit from therapy. But at the same time, not everyone can afford therapy, and not everyone has the courage to be able to go to therapy and find a therapist that works for them. When I was growing up and I looked around my life and I saw all this, you know, this pain and suffering, and I said I was going to change my life, I remember turning to some of my friends that lived, you know, in the same area. And I was just like, you know, I don't quite like this. We need to do something, you know, that's different. We need to get out of this. We need to do better for ourselves and our families. And they kind of just accepted reality as it was. They were like, well, actually, you know, this is our life. And then when I spoke to, I remember there was a religious figure in our community, and I remember speaking to them about my, you know, our life and the circumstances. And he gave this whole spiel about, you know, God giving me this life because I was meant for it. And, you know, some people's lives all look different, but mine's going to look like this, and it's okay, accept it. And I just never liked these answers. I was just like, you know, there must be something better out there for me.
It's quite demoralizing, you know?
It is. And, you know, when you're younger, you do hang on to a little bit of hope. And I literally had no hope around me. I had no one to turn to. I had no mentors. I had no one that was living a flamboyant life. You know, I had no kind of source of inspiration until the internet. And this sounds really strange. So I was a major hip hop fan growing up, and I used to visit this hip hop forum. It's like a message board, and on that message board there was a section where people used to talk about life, philosophy, like neuroscience, conspiracy theories, all kinds of stuff. But I always found that area really intriguing, and in that area people would suggest books. Now in school I had never really read books. Put it this way, every time we had to do a book review, I would read like the first page and the last page, and then I would just make up the whole story and I'd hand it in, and I'd never get caught, unfortunately. But I wasn't into reading. But in the forum, someone suggested a book that Bruce Lee had read, and they said that it, you know, completely changed their life. And then there was a lot of like entrepreneurs on that message board, and they had recommended this same book. And I thought, right, I need to get my hands on this book. So, you know, I probably shouldn't be saying this on a podcast, but I ended up downloading it through LimeWire.
Oh, don't worry, babe. We've all done far worse, I'm sure.
If it makes anyone feel better, I did get a bunch of viruses as well when I downloaded it. But I couldn't, you know, I couldn't afford, I wasn't in the financial position to buy books. So I downloaded this book, and it slowly started changing my mindset. And I realized that to lead a positive life, you have to have a positive mindset. And I think from that point onwards, I just started building on this mindset. And I was really into sports. So I started studying some of, you know, the greatest athletes of our time, like Michael Jordan, tennis players like Pete Sampras at the time, football players. And I really started tapping onto their mindsets. And I realized that by changing your mindset, you can change your response to your circumstances. So your circumstances don't define your life. Yeah. And, you know, those gradual shifts then started taking place, and I started noticing the effects on my actual life. And, you know, things gradually got better, but, and this is a big but, a lot of it became quite toxic in terms of toxic positivity. I was...
Yeah, what is that exactly? Because I feel like I think I know what it is. Because sometimes, you know, when you're having a bad day and someone's like, it's all right, tomorrow will be better. Is that what it sort of is? Or have I got the wrong end of the stick?
No, I think you're right. Because toxic positivity to me is basically denying circumstances and your reality and suppressing your feelings for the sake of being positive. It's just like...
It's not healthy, is it?
Well, it's not healthy because you don't give your chance... you know, time and space to process your emotions. You're almost like pushing it away.
It's denial. It is.
It's exactly it. It's denial. And if you think about it, it's almost like, so you know, you those little inflatable balls that you get for swimming pools. Now, imagine like pushing that down. That's like you pushing your, you know, your negative emotions down. The harder you push, the higher it flies, right? Yeah. And that's what happens when we suppress these emotions. We push down on them, and then eventually we have to channel them in a certain way.
Yeah.
That's when we might end up hurting other people. And I did a lot of that. And it wasn't until my final year of university where it really caught up on me. And, you know, I'd just gone through a breakup. Everything in my life was going wrong. I wasn't having a good time at uni. My granddad had just passed away. And I just didn't want to be here. I was just like, my whole life I've suffered. And I thought, you know, suffered for what? Like, I've got all these dreams of, you know, making a difference in the world, for wanting better for myself and for my family. But all I've experienced throughout my whole life is pain. And the more you dwell on it, the more you see circumstances and things that haven't gone to your advantage.
Yeah.
And I was in a really low place. And, you know, eventually I was fortunate enough to pick myself up from that place. But when I did, I promised myself that A, I never want to be back in that place. And B, that there has to be a more organic, more real way of, you know, being a positive person rather than just pushing things to the side. And what I'd realized was that all these massive, you know, experiences that I had gone through as a child, they were traumatic to me. And, you know, especially as a guy, you know, I felt like I had to be this kind of alpha male dominant figure who just got on with things, that just went and made money, you know, didn't acknowledge his feelings, yeah. You know, didn't cry.
Tough guy.
Yeah, this tough guy. And, you know, I was big on the gym at that time. And, you know, I was, you know, the whole mindset was just me pushing aside how I truly felt to fit society's expectations of what I think I should be. And it was very unhealthy, and it led me to this low point. So I started this journey of self-love. But again, I didn't quite know what that meant. I didn't even label it self-love at the time. It was just, let me explore this inner vex. Let me find out who I really am. And let me find out my place in the world beyond what others want me to be in the world. And, you know, that journey still happens to this day. But I think once I started that journey, I was able to show up in the world in a more organic, real, positive way rather than this kind of toxic denial, rejection kind of way.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think because there's so much emphasis to like nowadays, isn't there, on being positive and being the best version of you and, you know, all these buzzwords that you hear. And like, I don't get me wrong, like I absolutely love positive people. I consider myself one, but that doesn't mean I don't have like bad days and I don't have moments of self-doubt and, you know, dark intrusive thoughts and all these sort of things. So at the moment, my life coach has set me a bit of a task because I'm struggling to, I suppose, you know, not do exactly what you're saying with this toxic positivity, just be like, just sort of say what I think I should be saying and show up how I think I should be showing up. So he says, next time something pops into my head that is, you know, whether it's like a big mistake I made 10 years ago, whether it's a fear I have of something that's going to happen, or whether it's just a really irrational anxiety of mine, he says, I have to sit with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I have to face it and I have to sit and journal about it and truly become comfortable in my uncomfortable. And I'm terrified, Vex.
Yeah. It is terrifying, but I feel like that's where the real change happens.
Yeah.
I think the pandemic was such a good example. I know it was traumatic to some collective degree, but during the pandemic, especially during the lockdown, we were forced to stay inside and face ourselves. Now, I don't know if this is completely true, but I saw something about divorce rates going up during the pandemic because couples had to finally face each other. And it's almost like we live in this world where we're constantly trying to escape each other, ourselves. We're trying to look for validation through different outlets. And I think one of the toughest things that you can do as a human being is really face your raw emotions and face your reality for what it is. That's completely frightening. And when I went on this self-love journey, I had to then face these raw emotions. I had to sit with them. And it's terrifying. You want to run away. You know, it gets uncomfortable. You're like, oh, I don't like this. So, you try to do something else, try to distract yourself. And I feel like we are a very distracted society. And if you look at social media and how much of an impact it plays in society as well, is that we're constantly glued to our phones now. We're almost masters in distraction, and it's so hard to just be present, not in just in the present moment with other people, but just with ourselves and just literally just be, because, you know, we repeat distraction all the time through our phones, through other technological devices. And it's almost not, you know, we're almost training ourselves to just live a distracted life rather than live a present life.
And you know, you're so right. But on that, I have a friend who works in TV, and they were pitching to Netflix. And they went in with all these like super brilliant ideas that they thought were like, you know, the next big thing, and we should make this and we should do that. And the feedback he got given was, these aren't second screen enough. Meaning that Netflix now are creating things, and this is not like, you know, solely them. It's not anything. It'll be every streaming platform. They want to make something that you are watching, but while you're on your phone, second screen. And that's specifically what they're looking for. Something that people can follow, but while they're really on their phone. And that to me is terrifying. Like, gone are the days where you make something so gripping and so brilliant, people can't take their eyes off it. It has to be second screen. That's sad.
And it's interesting that Netflix, you know, a big organization like Netflix, are actually creating things to fuel that.
Yeah, they're perpetuating this culture of us just constantly being distracted and overstimulated and not facing anything, not really watching or dealing or doing anything properly. We're all so distracted.
That's so strange. You know what's funny? I was having this conversation with my wife the other day, and it was like, remember, we're going to sound old now, but back in the day, right?
I always sound old, don't worry about it.
Everyone watched the same shows, right? You had Channel 1 to 4 and potentially 5, and if you had Sky, you might have had a few extra shows. But everyone watched the same shows, and then you went into school and you discussed the same shows, basically. Yeah. Everyone was watching, you know, but it was like Blue Peter, Grange Hill.
I was going to say Blue Peter. I used to love it.
Blue Peter, but I don't know if you remember like Grange Hill, Biker Grove.
Grange Hill, love them all. Love them
all. All these shows, and we all watched them, but it's because we didn't have any other options. We all had to tune in at a certain time. Now, me and my wife always do this. We flick on Netflix and we're like, there's so much choice.
Overwhelmed.
You're completely overwhelmed. So you're flicking and then you switch something on. And if it hasn't stimulated you within the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh, this is boring. Let's go to the next thing. And let's go to the next thing. And I almost feel like that's happening in dating as well.
I was going to say the same thing. That's what scares me, is that we're such an instant gratification generation that when something doesn't instantly captivate you or give you everything you think it should, you just move on. And you do it whether you're swiping right, you do it whether you're on Netflix, we're doing it, and it's filtering through in every area of our lives. And I just get really worried that people are missing nice connections or good TV shows or whatever it is.
Yeah,
because we're in such a rush.
It's the paradox of choice. So I've spoken about this in my latest book that's coming out. On April 25th, which is Things No One Talks About Love. And this paradox of choice is that because we have so many choices, some people almost stay put because they're so overwhelmed and they don't want to, you know, go through the dating gauntlet. And then other people are just like, well, I'm just going to keep swiping until I find the person that fulfills all my needs. The problem with that is that you'll never find the perfect person, and you'll never find someone that fulfills every single expectation that you have, because a lot of those expectations are you trying to fulfill void through other people that only you can be responsible for. And I see that with, you know, if you read through my Instagram DMs, most of my messages are about love and relationships. And there's so many people that are so unlucky in love. But I feel like there's this disposable culture that's happening as well, is where if I'm just going to throw out some, you know, made up names, but say Brian doesn't give you everything you want, you know, you hop onto Dean. And if Dean doesn't give you everything you want, you hop onto Deshane, and, you know, you carry on. And you just become almost like a serial dater, because there are so many options and so many choices. And it's almost pulling us away from this kind of hard work. And I say hard work because connection isn't just a feeling. It's work. It takes work. In a relationship, there's you, there's your partner, and there's the relationship itself. You have to take care of yourself. You have to take care of your partner, but you also have to take care of the connection. And I think we've kind of lost touch with that.
Yeah. And as well, like, I do think people believe like that they shouldn't have to work hard to make some, like, they believe that it's just going to be easy, and when you fall in love or meet the right person, like, it's totally plain sailing, like it is in the films or Disney or whatever. But actually, the older I've got, the more I realize, like, loving someone is not enough. Like, you have to love yourself as well and really want something to work and be willing to work at it. And it's kind of like a bit of a daily struggle. I don't know if struggle's a nice word, but sometimes that is how it feels, you know?
Yeah, and you're completely right, because, you know, we're complex human beings. We have our preferences, our likes, our dislikes. And then we have the world outside, you know, we have challenges with mental health, with work, you know, other forms of career, friendships. And within the dynamic of a relationship, we're almost bringing that all of it into it. And then our partner has the same thing. And we also have our own stories. So we have our past hurts and our traumas and our wounds, and they also have theirs. So we have two individual stories, and we're trying to create a new one with our partner.
Yeah.
And that's extremely difficult, because you're trying to not only make space for yourself and understand yourself and take care of yourself, you're also trying to take care of your partner. And then you're trying to keep that closeness alive, which takes active effort and work. I think I've actually just got it here. Yeah. So top reasons for divorce from the National Library of Medicine. So this was just published. And the top reason is a lack of commitment. And I think that speaks volumes, you know, for this generation, because I think
that's really sad.
It is sad. And that was at, you know, at 75%. But I think that's quite sad, because I think what happens is people enter these connections and there's these sparks. And a lot of the time, the spark's actually not a reflection of love. It's just a reflection of your hormones, and you're experiencing this, you know, this beautiful thing with a stranger. They look beautiful, they can do no wrong. You've got, you know,
it's lust, it's excitement, it's like something new. Like, we've all been there.
Yeah, there's all these high energy emotions, and, you know, human beings aren't programmed to live in a heightened state. And eventually you have to come down to like this equilibrium, and then things become a little bit steady. And sometimes the steadiness to some people is equivalent to boredom.
Boredom, yeah. And they're like, they associate steady and reliable with boring. Yeah. And like, do you know what, mate? I might be wrong, but everything I've had go wrong in my love life, you know, all of the toxic relationships, the breakups, the heartache, everything, I was really ready for steady. I was ready for like nice, normal, dependable. And like the relationship I have with me fella currently, right? I think 20-year-old me would have been bored titless. She would have been like trying to wind him up, or I would have been like going out, staying out all night, just trying to like cause an argument. I am so happy with steady. And like, do you know what, Vex? I don't understand why people aren't just happy with normal and nice and steady.
This is an assumption, but I assume that you've done a lot of healing work, whether you know it or not. Yeah. to develop emotional maturity. What I find with the chaos that a lot of people are attracted to is they're basically repeating a cycle or a pattern that they might have experienced during their childhood. They might have grown up in chaotic environments. And so they look for the familiar in their adult relationships. And for example, you know, there's always this idea of the bad boy, and, you know, a lot of women are attracted to the bad boy, because a lot of the time what the bad boy does is they blow hot and cold. So they give you all this lust, affection, attention, and then they pull it away. And when they pull it away, you almost have to win them over again. And when you win them over, you get this hit of dopamine, and then you become addicted to them and you create a strong attachment to them. And I think a lot of the times these patterns are repeated because we've never actually taken time to go inward and heal ourselves and realize that what we're trying to do is just repeat what's familiar, but not necessarily what's healthy for us.
Yeah. You know, for years, mate, you're right. I've had to do loads of self-improvement and work and healing. It was necessary and it was hard, but I've loved it. I love the person I'm becoming. But I once heard, and I don't know how true this is, but you, whatever love you observe at home, you accept that and emulate it, and that's what you search for as an adult. And my dad is an alcoholic, and I watched me mom try and fix him a whole life. From when I was very little until I was an adult, I watched her give every single bit of herself to try and make him better, to try and make him quit, to try and, you know, everything. And I thought that's what women did in relationships. I thought they gave every part of themselves to a man to make him better. And that's what I did for years with blokes, these probably quite broken men who needed to heal themselves. You know, I was like I thought I was like a rehabilitation center. You know, it wasn't until I started, doing the work myself, I thought, hang on, this isn't what love should look like. Because you never fix somebody else. You just end up breaking yourself more in the process of it, don't you?
Yeah. And I think you also hinder their own growth, thinking, you know, sometimes there's a chapter in my new book where I talk about that you're not your partner's babysitter or parent. But I think a lot of the time we do. And sometimes actually we try to be the parent to our partners that we never had growing up. And sometimes we also try to resolve the issues that weren't resolved in our childhood. So although we can adopt templates of what love looks like, so for example, you were almost, I suppose, doing what you thought love looked like, which was taking care of your partner. But if your mother was never able to almost, and I say fix very lightly, but fix your father's alcoholic problem, you might have tried to resolve that as you got an older, thinking, right, I'm going to do it. And so you try and try and try until one day you realize that actually all you can do is lead with love, and it's up to someone else how they respond to that.
I'm like, you know, I kind of realized as well, like I was sort of just enabling people, and I wasn't allowing them the chance, the opportunity to heal and grow and be better versions of themselves when I was trying to run around making them better and do everything for them, you know? So that's been really interesting for me, Vex. I could actually talk to you all day. I'm a big fan. But it is time for a break. I can't wait to chat to you in part two.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.